Hey everyone, so recently I had an episode where I talk about how my wife and I bought and then renovated a home, and we created a budget template to track costs and hopefully limit our spending and stick to the plan as much as possible. So with that, I put out a budget template that you can go and get, and that was our most downloaded freebie from the Career Yak show thus far. So I'll put a link again in the show notes. Go check that out if you have any type of projects, or you're renovating a house, or you're doing even a smaller project and you have to see what it's going to cost and track costs throughout so that hopefully you don't overspend. Go check that out. Super helpful. Just wanted to remind everyone of that. And thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
By that point in time, I was relying on God to help me out because I had come to a breaking point where I realized I couldn't take the weight of it anymore. It was just too much weight. I can't carry that on my shoulders. And it caused me to find a breaking point where I had to go, I can't do this by myself, so how am I possibly going to do it? And that led me to reaching out to God, saying, help me with this. And that's what I was missing in the early days.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Career Yak podcast. I'm your host, Chris Goodwillie, and on today's show, I'm excited to share it with you. It's a fascinating conversation we have with Derek Stevens. Derek is a retired police officer with over 20 years of experience in the state of Colorado. We talk about how he relies on his faith in God during hard times and coping with tough situations. We talk about the desire for camaraderie and how that inspires and pushes him in his job. And also, what's interesting is Derek started a side business while a police officer. He has since retired, but he's still running his own business today that helps other officers with survival tactics and things like that. So I hope you enjoy the show. I will, quick warning, there is a little bit of maybe a little more mature subject matter just due to the nature of Derek's jobs he has had. So nothing crazy, but just a forewarning. But I hope you enjoy, and here's our conversation. So today we have Derek Stevens on the show. Derek is the owner of his business that he started, Rally Point Training Consulting in Colorado. And Derek is a retired police officer who has had over 20 years operating as a police officer in the state of Colorado. And now what he does with his business is trains other officers on different survival tactics and strategies. And he'll go into more detail with that with us. But Derek and I are good friends. We got to know each other in Colorado through a messianic Christian congregation group of believers that our families both attended, and Derek and I have had a couple years just of really getting to know each other and our families, getting to hang out. So definitely honored to have him on the show. And Derek, first of all, I want to thank you for your service, and I know you were in the Air Force as well as your service in the arm in law enforcement. We definitely appreciate that. And just if you can introduce yourself real quick and kind of give us a snapshot of where you're at now, and then we'll kind of jump back to the beginning after that.
Okay, absolutely, brother. So my name is Derek Stevens, law enforcement for 22 years in the state of Colorado. Like Chris mentioned, a small business owner, a bit of an entrepreneur with my company, teaching officers survival tactics across the country. It's just a great thing to be able to do, to be able to help try to keep the officers safe and thereby the public safe. So it's just a great way for me to be able to continue on with my career that I started way back in the day. It's always been a pleasure of mine to serve, and this is a way I get to keep continuing to do so.
That's awesome. You've obviously had, you know, as I've gotten to know you, you obviously have had a passion for this type of work, or you probably wouldn't have stayed in it that long. What, going back to the beginning, you were in the Air Force, am I correct?
Yeah, I served in the United States Air Force right when I got out of high school.
Gotcha. And then I know after that transition, correct me if I'm wrong, you kind of bounced around between various roles and various jobs. How did you settle on law enforcement and describe the start of your police officer journey?
So the start of my police officer journey is probably something that I never saw was actually starting at the time. I didn't have any intentions on doing that or anything. I actually enlisted in the Air Force when I was 16. I had to wait until I graduated high school. Right after I graduated, I went into basic training, held a job in the Air Force where I had a top secret security clearance, and that actually has less positions in that job than the Navy SEALs do. Well, not nearly in the same arena as Special Forces guys, but it was a very small niche job, and I kind of had my entire career planned out. I thought that was going to take me back to Lackland as a tech, one of the drill instructors. I was hoping to end up at NORAD. Things didn't work out because of an untimely car crash in the line of duty that ended up resulting in a disability where I couldn't have my security clearance anymore.
Oh, wow.
So what I thought was going to be happening with my life was not what was going to happen with my life. So
And
after
how
I
long
got out,
had
I
you been
didn't.
in the Air Force at that point?
About 3.5 years.
Okay.
So I worked on Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missiles, the security systems for them, targeted them, all sorts of hootenanny stuff. It was really an interesting job, not a whole lot on the outside world for that. So when I got out,
You can't
this
go
is
down the
not
street and get
commonly
a
found.
ballistic missiles job, huh? No.
Not that easily. So when I got out, I didn't really have a focus. I was just trying to pay bills, right? I was working for money to pay bills. I didn't have a real team to work with. I didn't have any goals. I didn't have loyalty to a cause because I was just trying to pay bills. So I ended up moving from job to job at basically the drop of a hat. I mean, I was working two and three jobs at a time sometimes, but I think the number is over 2 years after I got out, I had had about a dozen jobs. So obviously not a whole lot of financial stability there. But that wasn't really what was getting to me. It was the fact I didn't have a team. I didn't have a cause. I didn't have a calling anymore.
Right.
So I started looking at becoming either a firefighter or a police officer to try to get that team back, the camaraderie. And so that I could serve other people again and not just, serving them food. What I didn't realize at the time is one of the main players in my life that probably helped move me into the law enforcement career was my best friend's dad when I was growing up. My father died when I was 13, so I spent a whole lot of time at this guy's house. I'd sleep on the couch almost every weekend. We were always hanging out together, me and my best friend. And his dad was an officer, so I got to interact with him all the time. I saw the human side of it. I used to play basketball with all the cops in that area, things like that. So when it came down to firefighter or police officer, I'd had all these very positive interactions with police officers growing up because I knew them as people. And then I think that's what helped convince me to go that route instead of becoming the firefighter.
Gotcha. No, it sounds like definitely a roller coaster ride. I'm sure it was a shock, after having that injury and or the whatever forced you out of the Air Force, especially when you mentally have a plan. That's I think managing expectations can be one of the hardest things. So, and so you started in kind of rural Colorado, correct? In the law
Yeah,
enforcement.
over near, yeah, in Garfield County, which is Glenwood Springs, Colorado. It's a gorgeous area, but small department, low pay, some great people. But for me, that was just a stepping stone department, and the department kind of knew that when they hired me on.
Now, did you attend an academy? Did you go to a recruiter? How was like the logistics of it all?
So in Colorado, you can either get on hired on by certain agencies that'll put you through an academy, or you can put yourself through an academy and then try to get a job afterwards. So I found a full-time academy. It's about 4 months long, up in my neck of the woods where I was living at. And I paid for it with a credit card, and I basically lived off of a credit card for 4 months because there's no time to work or anything with all the studying. So stacked up some pretty decent bills doing that, but it was worth it in the long run. As a matter of fact, I just got a job as an adjunct instructor going back to the same academy. So now I get to help teach the new guys coming up from day one in the academy.
Really? That's cool. Full circle, huh?
Yeah, I think it's really nice because it's the same academy too. I mean, it's changed so much over the years. It probably doesn't look or act the same, but to me, it's the same. So it's kind of a nice full circle, like you said.
And is that in Denver or?
It's in Greeley.
In Greeley. Okay, cool. Wow, that's cool. That's you get to look on the other end now. So, and as you grew, you know, you served in different departments and different locales. You've had quite a few roles. You know, I was just stalking you on LinkedIn prior to this conversation.
Oh, you're one of those guys, huh?
Yeah, exactly. But no, and I knew a lot of this firsthand just from our conversations. But you know, you've done detective work, you've done canine work, you've done, you know, street patrol, SWAT. Have you enjoyed the variety, and is there something that you enjoyed the most, or did you just kind of enjoy seeing different aspects of it in general?
So there's very little that I didn't enjoy about it. Mm-hmm. I did get to see and do so many things, and my career kind of grew. When I first got my job, it was in the detention center in Garfield County. It was a very small jail. Ted Bundy had actually escaped from there back in the day.
Wow.
It was an interesting environment. And coming from, you know, these jobs as a roofer and a waiter and all these things that I had just been doing, and now I'm working inside of this jail, and I'm seeing this, well, shall we call it an interesting side of people that you don't normally see, you know, the side when they're locked up and
right.
All these kind of things. So you get to learn a lot from people that way. And then my boss came to me one day and said, congratulations, you got that job starting the court security program that you put in for. And I said, I never put in for that job. And he said, congratulations. And I said, okay. So we made a deal. I'd start up the court security program for him. I'd write the SOPs. And 6 months later, he'd put me on the road, which is where I wanted to be on patrol. Since then, I've worked a lot of patrol work, undercover narcotics, two different street crimes units, SWAT, canine handler for a dual purpose canine. I was assigned to a federal task force targeting organized crime and human trafficking, worked as a field training officer, a lot of things with a lot of action. And it was, that's the kind of thing that always kept me going to work, was action, action, action. Mm. My last assignment after my last series of injuries, I ended up being saddled to a desk and assigned as a property detective. And that's a different speed than I was right. used to for 20 right. years prior. Some great learning, some great people, some great cases, still part of a team helping with a whole bunch of bad stuff that's going on, but it was just lacking the action part. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't necessarily my favorite part of my career, but it was absolutely a valuable part of my career.
Gotcha. No, that's cool that obviously you've stuck with the law enforcement theme, but you know, you've had a wide array of experiences within it all. You're still involved heavily, obviously, with your business, but just looking back on your career up to this point, has being a cop changed you as a person? And if so, how so?
Oh, it absolutely has. I don't think you can go into it without it eventually changing you. It changed the way that I look at people, the way that I see the world, how I trust and don't trust people. The interesting part of that is now that I've been out of law enforcement for a few months now, since my retirement, some of that is starting to kind of slough off a little bit, but the underlining tone of always watching my back, always knowing who's around me, always knowing where the doors are, always scanning the public, those kind of things stay. But the ability to relax more when I'm at home is coming back, which is a really nice positive thing.
Gotcha. But you're definitely obviously hyper aware in public situations, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's a different way to live. I mean, on the outside, it doesn't look like much, but on the inside, you're just always watching and looking and planning. And if this happens, then this. But it's okay. I get to take care of my family. I keep my family safe. I stay safe, and it just becomes part of you.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. Now you kind of touched on this briefly just a minute ago, just seeing, you know, an interesting side of people and, you know, whether they're incarcerated or just you run into them on the street. You've definitely witnessed, obviously it's no secret, what cops, I mean, we don't understand from a civilian perspective what you guys have to go through, but you've witnessed a dark side of society. I mean, there's no other way to put it. How have you managed to cope with those experiences in your daily life when you're off duty, given the nature of your job?
So that has taken a few twists and turns along the career. In the beginning, because what people don't understand is you say the words like, you know, the dark side of society and stuff. It's actually like a lot darker than people would think. Or than most people would think, I would say.
Right.
And
interesting.
Inside the departments gets pretty dark sometimes too. If they're not backing you, then that's a horrible place to be, because you have everything coming from the outside, then you have it coming from the inside too. In the beginning of my career, you know, younger and full of giddy up and go, you just go through it and you push through it and you push through it and you try not to think about it too much. But you end up with situations that you see when you close your eyes at night, right? Things happen in the job, good things and bad things. And some of it just sticks with you forever. Some of it you slough off. Some of it just keeps coming back. It doesn't really matter who you are. There's going to be those kind of things. For a while, unfortunately, for a while, there was a point in time where I was working for a department that wasn't backing me, and they were spending an exorbitant amount of time trying to cost good cops good careers. And I don't know what their motivations were. I have my opinions on them, but when you don't have the support from inside the department, and then all of a sudden you're faced with all this evil all day long. Because you got to remember, people don't call the police to say they're having a good day. So while we deal with a tiny fraction of the public, well, it's only a tiny fraction of the public, it's the vast majority of the problems. And we're getting called to those, and we have to live through those with these people in one way or the other. So it went from just sloughing everything off and pushing forward and carrying on as best as you can to then all of a sudden there's no backing inside the department. So then you start pushing your boundaries as a human. And then thoughts start coming into your mind that shouldn't be there. And alcohol has a tendency to come into play for a lot of officers. And then, I mean, it's not hard to end up in a situation where you're living on this edge that we shouldn't be at. I lost one of my friends in law enforcement to suicide. It's the number one killer of law enforcement in this country is cops killing themselves. There's a ton of pressure and a ton of weight that goes on you. And it's, people are talking about it now, about how we end up with PTSD, whether it's from one incident or it's cumulative because of the vast majority of things. So I've had to live through that, and that, you know, that causes some hard times and made for an interesting few months while I was trying to wrap my head around what was going on and things like that. But at the same time, the toughest things that I've gone through in my job with people trying to get me directly, people trying to kill me, people trying to sue me for things that I didn't do. Luckily, during all those times, I had a clear head and I was relying not on myself anymore. By that point in time, I was relying on God to help me out. Because I had come to a breaking point where I realized I couldn't take the weight of it anymore. It was just too much weight. I can't carry that on my shoulders. And it caused me to find a breaking point where I had to go, I can't do this by myself. So how am I possibly going to do it? And that led me to reaching out to God saying, help me with this. And that's what I was missing in the early days. Unfortunately, it's just the truth, but that's what's really helped me get through the darkest hours. That plus strong family.
Right, right. And you and I share a, you know, mutual faith in Christ. And, you know, that, like you said, the reliance on Him and in those tough times, I'm not claiming I've gone through the same thing, even in the least comparison, but I'm sure that's been, it doesn't mean things aren't hard, I'm sure, but I'm sure that's been something you can, your faith in Christ is something you can definitely, you know, prioritize in those times for sure.
Well, and it's always nice to be able to say, if God is with me, what can man do to me?
Right.
So,
oh, absolutely.
I mean,
and
it,
I can't imagine.
It gives you a different perspective.
Right. And I think about, you know, whether it's law enforcement or military or, you know, I don't have experience in either, but I can't imagine going through the experiences that those guys and yourself have gone through without, you know, my faith in Christ and, you know, hoping God and, you know, the backing of, you know, scripture references and things like that. I can't imagine, you know, dealing with some of the stuff that has to be dealt with without that. So, yeah, no, I can only imagine. How have you been able to, you know, as a believer, be a witness to your fellow officers and then even maybe people you run into that, you know, aren't your coworkers in that work environment?
So being a witness in law enforcement is obviously a touchy situation with separation of church and state. And we have to work with and serve every type of person imaginable, right? So there's definitely people you're not going to broach the subject with because they're going to try to use it as a tool to get out of something that they had done. Mm. I've seen some guys, great hearts, great believers, trying to preach to the wrong people in the wrong circumstances at work. And they can end up costing you your career. And if it costs you your career, how can you continue to help those same people? So sometimes you had to work and just show them, you know, show them the light without talking to them about it. Now that doesn't mean by any means that there weren't times where I sat down and prayed with families who had just lost loved ones, right? It means that I wasn't out trying to pray with a meth addict who's high and was caught in a stolen car. Mm-hmm. That just isn't going to do the same thing. One is going to be able to help people and one is going to get me in trouble and let the bad guy go free and then prevent me from helping future people. One of the nice things for me is that I had some really close friends at work and I was able to have great conversations with my best friends. And they knew who I was. They know what I believe. They know where my ethics, my values are. They know how I prioritize my life and that I trust God. And you can have a lot of those conversations inside the department. Again, you have to watch who your audience is. But these are, you know, these are guys and gals that I was very close friends with. So I think it helped because I've seen times over my career where I would say something and you could see the spark in their eye, the look of recognition of going, okay, so that's where this is coming from. That's how he's able to hold his head up high during this. Or, hopefully a couple of them who maybe didn't have as good of a relationship with Christ as they should, I'm hoping that it opened some doors for them or made them think about it. I know a couple people that I've been in law enforcement with that I do believe it had a direct positive influence on.
No, that's awesome.
It's a different world being part of the government.
Right, I'm sure. And I think it's important for us as Christians to behave in the right ways too, like you said, because, just I've been in sales and the business world, and, if I preach at someone and then go, scam someone in a sale and lie to a customer, that's not a good witness. So it's like, it has to all be there to be a good, representative of Christ and who he wants us to be. So it's cool to, be able to befriend people and have their mutual respect and have their attention and be able to, do it on a more intimate level where it will be more of a, friend to friend conversation. I think that's really neat. So moving on kind of towards more recent happenings, you were unfortunately injured while you were working with the canine unit, and that pushed you into an earlier than expected retirement, if I'm correct. How have you managed that transition, and can you maybe describe what you were doing in your current role when all that happened?
So I actually ended up had a series of different line of duty injuries, and those kind of compiled on top of each other until all of a sudden I had this injury working with the canine unit. Multiple surgeries, a couple of years of rehab, and what that, unfortunately, at the time I had my canine partner, who was absolutely incredible. Love that dog to death. The amazing things that those animals will do for us. It's just, it's insane. And the bond was absolutely incredible too. So I had him, and I was working really, really hard to get back to him, trying to get through the rehab, trying to get the body back to the shape it was supposed to be and everything. And it just became apparent that that wasn't going to happen in a timely manner for the dog. So I ended up having to give up the dog. At the same time, I had already been running my own side business for a few years, doing some trainings here and there, just, when I had days off or take a vacation time or something like that. So when I started to see the writing on the wall that the doctors weren't going to release me back to work, and that this was finally just too many injuries and I wasn't going to be able to pass the physicals anymore, I started pushing more and more onto my business, just in case this did end up as the end of my career, which it did. But, those are just some of those things that happen in life, and you never know where things are going to turn out to.
Right, absolutely. Now, what possessed you to start the business, and how long have you been in business, and when did you, what were you doing in law enforcement when you started on the side?
So I started my business in 2012. At that point in time, I was, I believe I was working on a street crimes unit. So we were plain clothes, low level narcotics traffickers, all the high risk calls, all the worst bad guys, in the city or that were traveling through the city. Those were the guys that we were after. So it was all action packed and things like that. And I was also training some new guys at work as a field training officer. And I started to realize that I was seeing things differently than the majority of the officers around me.
I was picking up on danger signs when other people apparently weren't. I was wondering why officers were making some situations. I don't want to say they were making them more dangerous, but their tactics or whatever weren't in line with what I was thinking. So I started wondering why it was that I was looking at things differently. And then I started to think, well, if I'm right on a couple of these things, then maybe I've got something to share. Maybe I should go out and start trying to figure out what's the base of this. Why am I looking at it differently? What am I looking at that's different or whatever is going on? So I ended up reading a bunch of books, studying a bunch of things that I never thought I would study, like literally getting way in depth into this book on how the brain and long-term memory works, written by a Nobel Prize-winning neurosurgeon. I mean, this is not up my alley whatsoever, but when I'm reading it, it's all making sense to me. And I'm like, well, this is pretty cool because I understand what he's saying and the way that I understand this. So I'm seeing something this way because of my experiences. Other people are seeing it a different way because of their experiences or training or whatever the case is. How can I utilize all this information to help try to keep cops safer? So when I started this process, it was literally, I had a notepad on my bedside table because I'd wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with a thought in my brain and I have to scribble it down really fast because otherwise when I woke up in the morning, it wouldn't be there anymore. And I just started feeling this really strong urge and passion to go, how can I do this? I might be able to save an officer's life. Even if I never know it, can I help save somebody's life without ever knowing it? Can I help officers to train smarter, to work smarter, and in turn, keep the public safer? Because when an officer does something that isn't the most optimal decision, then it's suboptimal for the public. It can make things worse and then more dangerous for both sides. So how can I keep everybody safe by doing this? And that's really where the inspiration for my business started at, was this weird look at, I'm seeing things different than other guys. To me, this makes perfect sense. Can I relate this to other officers?
Wow, that's awesome. I knew the gist of it. I don't know if I've ever gotten the details on kind of the inspiration behind it all. So essentially your classes and your meetings that you host are just all about different survival strategies for, and do you cater to like young officers and newer officers?
I've had officers in my class who have done 37 years on the job. I've had guys who were a couple weeks into their job. I had a great pleasure of one officer who's a commander down in the Denver metro area who was attending my class, who had done 34 years on the job before getting into a shooting. At 37 years on the job, he's in my class still wanting to learn more about officer survival. Is there something he can pick up? Is there something he can keep himself safer with? Is there something he can pass along to his people? And in return, I got to hear his story and had him present. And now I get to present his information to other officers because he wanted to do the same thing. He said, here's my life story that with this incident, here's my lessons learned. Here's the good and the bad. Can you pass this forward so that other officers, you know, maybe we don't have an officer end up in this situation, or if they do, they know that they can survive it or whatever. So it's catered to all of law enforcement, and everybody who attends gets a little something different out of it because of their job, where they work, what their assignment is, what their background is, things like that. So it's really nice to be able to do.
I think it's a good lesson for any industry. You know, we all can learn no matter how long we've been doing something. So that's exciting. And it seems like it gives you a drive to definitely continue it's obviously a noble cause for sure when you're, when people's lives are on the line. So just transitioning a little logistically, how did you start the business, and did you have to get approval from your department to have this side gig?
So I did have to get approval because our policies state that you can't have any outside employment without their permission. That's so that officers aren't out getting jobs that would be an ethical clash to their law enforcement job. So they're not working too many hours off the job, which is going to negatively affect their abilities at jobs, stuff like that. So when I started it, I didn't know anything about running a business whatsoever. It had never crossed my mind before. And I didn't have any money to put forward to it. So after all the research, after all the brainstorming, after notebooks full of scribble in the middle of the night, all these other kind of things, I had to learn how to start a business. I had to do all the research into the difference. What's the difference between an LLC and an S corporation? How do I file a trademark? What are articles of incorporation? How do I file them? So it was a lot of time on the computer trying to research. And then I had the other issue of, am I the right person to do this? Can I do this? Why would anybody want to listen to me in the first place? You know, these other sides of it. Because I made a product. The product happens to come out in a seminar form for my original course. But it's a product. So are people going to like the product? And, you know, what's the market value of it? And all these other kind of things. I had the pleasure of going to a training that was put on by Dr. Neil Troutman. And during one of the breaks, I went up to him and I asked, and I explained, hey, this is a quick who I am. I've got this passion. I want to be able to do this. I don't know anything. What do I do? Should I even try? Was kind of the question. And he said, there's a couple things that you need to do. He said, for my job, for what I was looking at, because it's what he does. He said, you need to join the specific association of law enforcement trainers. You need to get published in magazines. And you need to go out and get your piece of the pie. And I said, okay, well, I can join an association. That's not hard. I never thought of writing articles for anything. Who would want to read the articles? But if this guy who I look up to is telling me that, hey, if you've got the passion for it, go for it. Okay, then I'm going to go for it. Coincidentally, then I had to go back and write an article or two and go, okay, well, what do I want to say? How do I put this down on paper? What's the format? And I started having, then I had to research how to write articles and how long they should be, and then how to submit articles. That's an entirely different process. So my very first article that I wrote, it's called Understanding the OODA Loop. I wrote it. It took me a few weeks to get it done because I was always going back and shuffling back and forth through it. And then I pushed it to the side and I let it sit for like 3 months without reading it. And that really? Way when I went back to read, well, that way when I went back to read it again, I had more fresh eyes on it. Because otherwise what was happening was I couldn't find the typos and grammatical errors and stuff because my brain thought it knew what should be on the paper. So it didn't really matter what was on the paper. I would overlook errors that I had because my brain told me this is what's going to be there. So after 3 months, most of that had faded. So it was almost like reading somebody else's article.
And this was your first one you had written?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a good idea, actually, huh?
Yeah, it was a really good technique. It just meant it took a long time to get anything done. And then you have to submit proposals to different publishers, and you have to say, this is who I am, this is what it's about, this is why you should publish it. Most places won't even call you back or send you an email back. So you just don't know. Luckily, the leading police law enforcement magazine in the country got back with me and said, okay, well, here's the form to sign, you know, to so that we can publish it. It got published. It was the 7th most read article on that publisher's online website that year. And I ended up getting a call from a firearms trainer who worked with the Metro Division of the LAPD. And he asked me if he could use it in their training curriculum.
Wow.
And of course I said, yes. I mean, it's LAPD. These and their Metro Division, which is their SWAT, their canine, their version of street crimes. These are some of the absolute best in the country, if not the world. Of course you can use the article. I hope you can glean something out of it.
Yeah.
I was just kind of in awe that they would even want to. But what it did is it helped me go, okay, listen, I'm telling myself I need to know if there's market value to this. There's clearly some market value to it, right? So then I had to go out and say, okay, how am I going to advertise it? Where do I advertise? I had to learn a market that I didn't know anything about.
Right.
So that took a lot of time and a ton of work. I mean, months of working 30, 40 hours a week at home for nothing while also working at work. I contacted every police agency in the state of Colorado after finding a place where I could host my first seminar at.
Just
I said,
calls.
Pre-train. Mail, mainly.
Yep. Okay.
Because it ended up being a lot quicker. I had to teach myself how to make my computer print envelopes. I mean, I didn't know how to do that, so I had to figure out how to do that. And then I built a mailing list of every department in the state and then had the computer print out envelopes for all of them, and I stuffed them, and I said, hey, free training, free training, free training, free training. And I had 10 people show up. I had 10 officers show up from across the state. I said, great, I got 10 people who might want to listen to me. And I threw up before I went into class because I was so nervous.
This is your first one, right?
Well, I probably threw up before putting on the first 8 seminars. And you got to remember, I was on SWAT. I had tons of action. I had done crazy stuff at work. I'd seen all these crazy things. I'd had people try to kill me. And this is what's pushing me over the edge, right?
Right, right.
Class. So I get done with the class. Yep. I get done with the class. I hand out evals. I read the evals. They're all very positive. I'm like, okay, good. There's a basis for this. And then it was just growth from there. It's just a ton of work, but, you know, keep pushing hard. And then the word gets around and the word gets around. And now specifically in the state of Colorado alone, I get paid to go down and teach the officers in the Denver metro area twice a year, which is the vast majority of police officers in the state of Colorado. So I was giving it away for free. I had 10 show up, and now I'm filling up classes that the state is paying me for.
Right. That's a recurring source of revenue for you.
Well, and it, more than that, it's this recurring, I get to keep learning from them. Hopefully they're learning from me. Every time I do a class, there's more people in it in that area. So the word of mouth is getting out. So the product is something that they're looking for.
Right. And that's got to feel good. I had so many mini lessons I just learned from your spiel right there. It's funny you mentioned, you know, your nervousness to like, am I the one that should be doing this? And I think it's good advice that you talked to that gentleman and kind of picked his brain, and he kind of gave you that vote of confidence because, you know, you hear the term imposter syndrome, and, you know, even you hear of stories that, you know, these well-known people are very successful, whether it's, you know, in business or other areas, struggle with that, you know, and struggle with, why would anyone want to listen to me? I heard a story once, and gosh, no one quote me on this, but I want to say like Maya Angelou, who is obviously a, you know, renowned writer in her time. On her like sixth book or something, someone quoted her as saying, and I'm paraphrasing obviously, but like, oh, they're gonna find out on this one that I'm not good at writing, basically, you know. And it's like, we're our own worst critic in that. So I think testing the waters and getting some real feedback is a huge lesson to anyone in any walk of life, any industry, because you hear on the flip side people that think the plan that is in their head is gonna, you know, be the next Amazon, and then they invest tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars and it's a huge flop. So, you know what I mean? So we have to have the courage to start like you did, but also the humility to kind of see if it's actually received by others. So that's fascinating. That's super cool. And it's funny you said, go ahead.
There is a part of me that wishes that I had started off selling a product, because then if somebody didn't like the product, I wouldn't know about it face to face right away.
Mm.
But since I'm up there and I'm translating this information for them, saying, this is where I'm at, this is what I want you to learn, let's talk, let's share. I am trying to directly hand them something basically out of my mouth. If they don't like it, I'm right there to know it.
Right. It's very intimate. You know? Yeah.
It's not like you go buy a gizmo at the store and you take it home and it's junk and you're like, oh, this stupid thing.
This is dumb. It's, yeah.
Yeah. If that's going to happen, I'm going to see it on your face.
Right. Right. It's very personal. That's, and I think it was cool too, that you know, in your first class, when you had 10 guys, you know, that you were pretty psyched about that, because I heard someone say once, like, you know, if you're trying to, whatever it is, start a blog or, you know, and trying to get big that way or whatever, you know, and you start out with just a few followers or readers, think about this. Other people that you don't know care about what's going on in your head. That's pretty cool. You know what I mean? So even if it's like minimal, especially at the beginning, you know, you got to start somewhere, and that's still proof of concept, you know? So
it's still minimal sometimes 7 years later,
right?
New markets and stuff like that. It's still minimal. I go to a new state I've never been in before. They've never heard of me. It's minimal.
Right.
They're like, who is this guy? Why do we want to listen to him? Which is exactly what I asked myself. Right.
Right. Right. How have you, been able to, well, I was going to ask, do you add to and revise your material on a periodic basis? And where do you get that material from?
So my core class that I teach, it's called OODA Loop Based Officer Survival. This is the what's inside my brain. How do we make you see some of the same things? How can we train your brain and your body to work better for you, to make better decisions, to work quicker, faster, more efficiently? I'm always looking for new stuff on that. I'm always looking at what's the biggest danger to law enforcement right now. Where are most law enforcement officers making mistakes that are costing them? And then I'm picking out patterns from those kind of behaviors, because we're creatures of patterns. So once you learn to see the patterns, you can go, okay, this is a continual problem that we have. What's behind it? What's the underlining part? Now that I know what's behind it and what's the underlining part, how can we tactically fix it? How can we mentally fix it? How can we physically fix it? So I'm always doing that, because the better we get at one thing, then all of a sudden we're going, something else is going to show up, right? If we could alleviate all officers from dying on traffic stops, then when you look at the list of what's the top five things that are killing law enforcement officers, there would be something new on the list. So it's always looking at it and looking at it. And the prevalence of cameras are everywhere now, which cameras are very limited because they only show certain information, but there's still a ton to be gleaned by it, especially when you're searching for patterns like this. So I'm always doing that. And then I get to, since it's my business, I get to go, okay, not only this, how else can I help keep officers and everybody else safer? So years ago, I contacted a company called North American Rescue. They put out some of the absolute best trauma supplies in the world, and stuff that's used by our military all over the world to save people on the battlefields. So I started selling that to my department so that we could have the proper gear. And I'd give them savings off of what they could buy for anywhere else. So the more that they save, the better gear they get. And then I ended up connecting with a company that's locally to me. They absolute great guys, from Angel Armor. They some of the absolute best ballistic protection in the world. They're just up the road for me. So I ended up connecting with them and saying, hey, I wear your stuff at work. I trust my life with it. Let me go show it to these other officers. Let me get it out there for you. We're talking about officer survival. Let me show this. And just things that fit in that same category. And recently I've been able to get certifications that I needed to be able to train officers in trauma care for how to properly use tourniquets, wound packing, things like this, so that when they or somebody else, because it's not just for the officer, they commonly use it on other people too. I have in my career is trying to help treat these trauma victims. So now I get to go beyond where I was, and I get to keep researching and going, how else can I help? How else can I help? How else can I help? What else can I possibly do to try to keep the officers in the community safe? And every time, every one of these new things, it's tons and tons of research and tons of basically beta testing on myself, my friends, my family, to be able to put out this product that is going to be able to save officers' lives. How can I do it better than anybody else can do it? Because if I can't, I'm not going to. That I'm not going to put out something that I don't honestly believe isn't going to be the best that it can possibly be.
Right. No, and that's a good mentality. Now, how do you, obviously, I mean, there's a ton of material preparation work that goes into what you do, but then you have to, as you mentioned, do the business side of it and long-term thinking, planning, whatever it may be. How do you balance like a day-to-day grind, a day-to-day routine with long-term thinking, and do you set specific goals on a, you know, short-term, medium, long-term? Can you just maybe touch on that a little bit?
Sure. So, first of all, now that I'm not wearing the uniform anymore, I try to get up at about 5 o'clock every morning if I can. That gives me time to get up and pray and study before I get to work. It gives me time before the family's up and moving around. And then what I do is every day it's something new. There's some stuff that repeats every single day. Obviously, emails and corresponding with officers and departments and all these things that I have to do. Keeping the books, tracking who's registered, processing payments, paying bills, all these wonderful chores that come along with the business. But then so I'm in a world where everything is a long-term issue. To get a training set, I have to contact all these departments and see who wants to host a training. And then we're going to look at what time of year might be best in their area. And then we're going to set the training 3 to 4 months out at a minimum, because the process takes a while to get everything to departments for officers to get interested in it, to get permission for it to go up the chain of command, for it to go over to payroll, all these kind of things that are going on. So the short-term activities that I have are normally stuff that has been in play for months in one way or the other. And at the same time, I keep having to look out beyond those. Okay, so I've got this number of training set in this time span. Now I need to, you know, keep going more and more and more. but I've got a calendar on my desk that everything gets wrote down in. It says, you know, I have or have not accomplished this task for this upcoming class. I need to do this on this date. I need to do this on this date, because otherwise I would just get lost in the haze of it sometimes. But the beautiful thing about it is, with being able to do this myself and have this my business, I also get to take advantage of that. So when my kids have something special going on, I get to mark those days off. When we have, you know, a birthday or something like that, I get to mark those days off. I just got back from elk hunting because I set off my entire hunting season. I pinned it out on my calendar and I said, I'm not working during this time frame because I'm going to go hunting. I don't have to ask for anybody's permission to take it off because I'm not going to deny myself the time off.
Right. It was pre-planned. You already allocated for it.
I'll work 16, 18 hour days coming up to it if I need to catch up on stuff. I'll work the same thing right when I get back from it. But why not go enjoy life? Isn't that, to me, that's the point of this. To me, the point of being able to run my own business and try to help officers and keep everybody safe isn't the money. To me, the point of it is continuing to do good things for good people and people that I've never met before. And in return, I get to have a good life. If all you're doing is chasing money and that's what the business is for, you're never going to find contentment in it.
Right.
Because you're never going to reach that goal that's good enough. One of my, I was talking to somebody the other day and he said, he was asking so-and-so, one of his relatives, if you won $100 million, would you finally retire? And his relative said, no, it's not enough money. If that's what you're looking for, you're never going to get it.
Right.
If what you're looking for is, I get to spend more time with my family, because yes, I work all day long, but I'm working in my house. And when I go train, about half the time I get to take my family with me. Mm-hmm. And my children get to go see the country. They get to go learn about this great country that we live in that allows people like me to do this. They get to learn our history. They get to go visit museums and zoos and different cultures that are within our country. And they get to experience all of this, and which makes for long road trips sometimes. But, I mean, hey, you end up singing like show tunes in the car with the family. That's not the worst thing in the world.
Can get a lot worse than that.
Yeah, it kind of depends on what you're looking at, what you're trying to do to say whether this is all worth it or not. Obviously, there are some financial issues that you have to have a certain amount of financial stability to be able to do it. But to me, the goal is bigger than the dollar. As I said, I've gone to different states, and I made a trip to Mississippi last year for 3 officers.
Wow.
I traveled all the way to Mississippi for 3 officers. And when I was done, after all of my expenses, that trip benefited me $75.
Wow.
But what had happened was, you get to a point where you go, am I going to do this or am I not? And I started this saying, I am trying to help save lives. And while making the financial decision, it was, okay, well, these 3 want to hear it. These 3 might gain something from it. Whether I know it or whether they know it or not, I might be able to help save one of their lives. So I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Because I'm not chasing the dollar. It's because I'm trying to fulfill this. And I think everything that I did in my career, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's God's plan. I had set goals in the beginning, because you're asking about goals. I'd set short-term goals. My very first year, I need to get published. I need to get all my books in order. I need to get a class. and beta, you know, I need to do all my beta testing and then I need to get a class. My second year, I need to get so many classes and I need to have this as a benchmark financially. My third year, my fourth year, and I had an original plan that said at my fifth year mark, if I'm not at a certain point, I'm done. Because I asked God to say either open the door or slam it in my face.
Yeah.
Well, how do I know if it's going to be slammed in my face? I'm not exactly sure how to interpret that myself. So I said at this mark, at my 5-year mark, if not, if I haven't accomplished this, then I'm going to take that as the door is closed. And then I made a longer term goal. And it said, if I'm going to do this and I want to do it for a living, then I have to have so much financial stability. I have to have money saved up in case things don't quite work out right so that I can take care of my family for a certain amount of period of time. And I have to have so many classes scheduled because I know what my averages are. So I know how many things I need, how many seminars I need to be able to put on a year to be able to hit these minimums.
Right.
Now, these aren't always easy to look at when I look at some of these multi-million dollar training companies that are out there. Mm-hmm. And I go, man, these guys are just, they're in 5 places this week. Mm-hmm. Right? I've got 5 places in the next 4 months kind of thing. But my goal is my goal. So I need this financial stability. I need this much in savings. I need this return rate on my registrations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, guess where I was when I got injured? I was right at about that tipping point where I was going to have to make my own decision on whether I was going to leave my career and go for this full time or not. Wow. And I think that probably would have been an excessively hard decision for me to make because of my passion for the job and my friends. So I get to right about this tipping point that I was looking at that was in my long-term plan. And all of a sudden I'm injured and my job is gone. So you would think that the injury and the job being gone would be this horrible thing. Maybe it's not. Maybe it was just the push that I needed to get over the leap that a leap of faith that I needed to take.
Right, right. No, that's fascinating that the timing was such, you know, it's made the decision a little easier, huh?
It didn't make the act easier. But it took the decision out of my hand.
Right, right. Now, kind of getting towards the end here and just wrapping up, what piece of career advice would you give to someone listening today that might be starting out or in the middle of their career that needs inspiration, whether they're in a, you know, a first responder industry or a business world or what have you? What career advice would you give to someone?
I'd say probably along the same lines of what I was just talking about. Be passionate about what you're doing. If you're only chasing the dollar, you're never going to find what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Right? Have faith that the decisions that we're making, as long as you're making the decisions for the right reasons, that they're going to work out for you the way that they're meant to work out for you. Right? There's unfortunately way too many people in this world that are in jobs that they hate.
Yeah.
Because they're just trying to make a dollar or whatever. There's too many people in this world that are only chasing power or whatever their situation might be. Those things, where is that going to get in life? Look at some of the people in this country who have all the power and all the money and how miserable some of those people appear.
Right.
That doesn't seem to me to be what it should be about. Find something that you're passionate about. Work really hard at it. And be able to look at yourself in the mirror every day. I know people in all sorts of career fields who have a hard time looking at themselves in the mirror because of things that they do. And it's something that I preach to law enforcement across the country. Never let your ethics and your values down, because how are you going to look at yourself in the morning? Even if you got away with it, even if you thought the ends justified the means, it's not right. It's improper. It might be illegal or unconstitutional, depending on what job you have and exactly what it was. But how are you going to look at yourself? You have to be able to hold your head up high no matter what happens. I personally would rather hold my head up high on a very tight budget than to hate life being a millionaire or a billionaire.
Right.
So, and things are hard. I mean, like I said, when I started this out, the first 8 trainings I went to, I was so nervous and fear of rejection and things like this that I needed to overcome. There's this weird conundrum where I can go to any kind of chaos that you can imagine and just stand in the middle of it and go, okay, I got this. But then all of a sudden standing in a room talking to people that are my peers was this really difficult thing to do, because I don't know if it's humble, if it was just nerves or whatever the case is, but I had to do it. So I had to look at myself and go, this is what you signed up for. Go for it. Enjoy it. Have fun while you're doing it. And if God wills it to be, then it'll be. So there's a lot of people that if you're looking at, should I have a passion for something, but that's not what I'm doing? Should I jump? Everybody's decision is their own. But I'm glad I was pushed.
Right.
If I wasn't pushed, I don't know if I would have had what it took to jump. And I know that I'm happier now that I was pushed.
Right.
So,
no, that's...
And we had that conversation with you and I when it came to some stuff where it was, hey, should I make this decision? Should I do this?
Right.
Well, does it feel like the right thing to do? Is it the moral and ethical thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
Then go forth and hold your head up high.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a great lesson we can all learn from for sure. And I like too how, you know, you didn't, when you started your business, you had a year of maybe getting your feet wet. You didn't just jump ship. Well, it helped that obviously you enjoyed your day job, but you know, you kind of gradually got into it. So maybe for other people out there too, you know, if you're not in your passionate field, you know, like you said, figure out what that is and maybe create, if you're not in, you know, obviously an ethical compromising situation, if it's just a different career change, create a game plan for a gradual transition. I think people think it's all or nothing. Sometimes it's just that gradual shift. It's that, what do I need to do to put myself in line for that, for what I want to be doing long term? So, no, I think we can learn a lot. You know, you've been a great friend and brother in Christ. I definitely admire your pursuit of justice and, you know, definitely appreciate you and your courage putting your life on the line, in the line of duty, you know, just in our American streets. And like you said, we can't even really imagine what all the bad goes on out there, but we're thankful for guys like you and other police officers out there. So, and then your entrepreneurial spirit inspires me for sure.
There's definitely a theme that you'll hear when you talk to other entrepreneurs, that I'd rather work 80 hours a week for myself than 40 hours a week for somebody else.
Right.
The jump or push or following the passion, I want to make sure that other people understand. I'm not saying about just, hey, I'm not that happy with my job, I've got these finances, I'm just going to blow them off to the side and jump headfirst into this thing.
Right, exactly.
We're talking, I spent years working 40 to 60 hours a week on the job.
On the side. Or,
and
right.
While working, then working another 20 to 40 hours a week on my own. And most of that without pay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always the quick thing. That's why have your plans, set benchmarks, set goals. But if you have a passion and you have a plan and you want to go for it, as long as you're sitting there not going for it, that's all that it's going to be.
Right.
It's just this, I could. sometimes you just have to do the dirty work, and you'll put in a ton of hours without instant gratification. That's for sure. And life gets a little bit harder for a while for many, many people. The goal is to make it better and easier for the long run. At least I think that's, hopefully that's coming out the way that I want it to. so that people aren't just going, you know what, I just want to go open this restaurant. I don't know anything about it. I'm going to go for it. Research it, study it, talk to other people that are doing it. You know, all of those kind of things to see if it's the right thing to do. And if you have to keep doing something else in the meantime, keep doing something else, because that's what we're called to do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You always want to provide for your family if you have a family, and, you know, have a good work ethic no matter what. So, no, I think I've heard it too described as like your day job you don't like now might be funding your dream of whether it's entrepreneurship or getting into a different field. So don't discount that, you know, value that aspect of it. So,
or your day job that you do love right now might just not be a day job that you're going to be able to have in another 20 years. Technology is going to change. We probably shouldn't have a bunch of 70-year-old police officers running around all over the country, making up the majority of the force. No bashing the guys who are out there still doing it. My hat's off to them. But as far as the overall majority, that's not normally what we see. You know, I was in a career where most cops are retiring by 55. Well, mm-hmm. What are you going to do after that? So right. Is it an exit plan out of something else? Is it a future plan for when technology takes over your job or the market changes, or you've just been able to have that time that you need to develop your product or whatever the case is?
I want to thank Derek. I want to thank all the police officers out there who go the extra mile and put their lives on the line to protect and keep our society safe. If you want to find out about Derek and his business, you can check him out online at rallypointtraining.com. That's rallypointtraining.com, all spelled out. And just wanted to say one of my takeaways was the persistence and effort of Derek during his time as a police officer and during his time starting a side business to get it off the ground, working long nights on the side, extra, just without pay, just to, you know, get to where he's at today. And my last thing I want to leave you all with, I looked up the paraphrased Maya Angelou quote that I had for you guys earlier in the show, but it says, quote, "I've written 11 books, but each time I think, uh-oh, they're going to find out now. I've run a game on everybody, and they're going to find me out." Again, that's a quote from Maya Angelou. And just want to encourage people to try things, to test the market like Derek did, and to not let imposter syndrome get in your way. Hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great day. Hey everyone, one way you can support the show is by checking out our new affiliate partner, Lone Birch Company, based out of New Hampshire, where I am as well. Their owner and founder, Jarek, actually did an interview with me. His episode may or may not be out, depending on when you're listening to this. But go check them out and use the coupon code CAREER for 10% off. They make wood, handmade wood products for your desk or office setting. So check them out. Super high quality stuff, and it'll help Jarek's business and the show. Thanks.